Hi there, I'm Jason McMullen.
And I'm Kate Ariano. Welcome to Words Aloud.
We love books. We love stories, poems, memoirs, narratives, and any kind of written or spoken word that moves us.
That's why we created Words Aloud, a space for us to invite writers of all kinds to share their pieces that we like.
Come get lost in words. You're with friends here.
Hello, all of you out there who click play on Words Aloud. You picked a good one today. Nicole Catarino is a graduate student of Louisiana State University and an author telling the tale of what happens when you enter the most sacred room of conversation, the car. Listen up for Nicole Catarino.
Glove Compartment Secrets. It was the tail end of autumn, an afternoon that ushered sunset through the door long before dinner, where the blue of the sky was muted like color strained through ice, and only the most stubborn foliage remained to brown on the frost-bitten branches. It was a day that gave virtue to the phrase dead of winter, despite the solstice still being a month away. It was the first time my mother asked me if I liked girls. I had been gazing out the window of the car the entire ride home, utterly winded from a long day of school and Girl Scouts, already dreading the inevitable lecture about homework once we got home. During the Girl Scout meeting, Cass had made a comment about thinking one of the women in our badge book was really pretty. Either she had forgotten her company or didn't care, decided the laughs it would elicit from us, her best friends with our own secrets, would be worth any side eyes from the mothers in the room. Maybe it did end up being worth it, as my mother was raised too polite to start a scene with a group of 15-year-olds in a house that wasn't hers. But the car was fair game. Several interrogations of, is Cass a lesbian, how long have you known, you know she can't sleep over anymore, right, later, she finally asked me if I liked girls too. Might as well reassure herself that her daughter wasn't the same, right? Except I was tired and worn out and both overheating and freezing in my too big down coat. So, still looking out the window, I decided to mumble, yes, I do. I had never admitted it out loud before. My breath fogged up the glass. My mother didn't say anything for a long time. How do you know? I don't know, I lied. Picked up a book in the library about two girls in love 3 years ago. Remember the new girl that moved here in sixth grade? The internet gave me no judgment, only answers. I just know. I've known for a while. I still didn't turn to look at her. The trees rushed by in blurs of red. But are you sure? Mom, you're still young. It's hard to know what you want at this age. Mom! By the time we pulled into the driveway, we were still arguing, a fight simmering to a boil underneath the pretense of a civil conversation. I had meant to be mature and give her time to understand, but a bigger part of me had been wanting this fight for a long time. I was dying to be angry, to bite back, to release all my rage towards the world, my mother's ignorance onto the unyielding dashboard. She pressed again, asking me when I first knew, and this time I told her the truth. I found I had no problem admitting what I had always been too scared to talk about under the roof of the car. I was only afraid of who she might tell once we got out. The car stopped. We stepped into the garage. Well, how do you know if you like girls if you've never dated one? You've never dated one, I retorted, perched on the stairs in front of the door, waiting for her to bring the key. So how do you know? She didn't have a response to that. After all, we had left the car. The time for honesty was over. Still, I bit back a smile, silently crowing over my victory. She didn't bring up the topic again. She never told my dad. I told her I was asexual a year later. Same car, same trip home. Repeat offender. The interrogation occurred all over again. How do you know, met by I just know, met by you're too young to know, met by blistering silence as I glared daggers, ashamed, at the passing trees. She was warming up to the idea of a girlfriend, though. Now that I'd had the year to clarify, I still liked boys, too. The conversation ended as soon as the car sputtered to a halt in our driveway. We both walked into the house, silent. We didn't talk about me anymore. My mother told me her biggest secret in traffic. Stuck on a bridge overlooking the river, she spilled details of a story she had never so much as hinted to me before into the heat of July's brutal summer. She talked about her youth, about college, decisions she made, the lessons, the fallouts. What started as a lecture about smart choices turned into a confession, and I watched in horror as she started to cry around her warbled syllables. I did nothing but listen, because of course I was listening, because she had never done this before, but I was thinking about how it was barely noon. This was no time for secrets. What could have stirred this earthquake of a revelation awake? The traffic trudged on. Sunlight radiated off the hood in waves like an oil spill. Around us, the cars jolted and fits and starts, as if the other drivers were trying not to move too far away from our gossip, craning their rubber necks to collect whatever bits and scraps of words they could hear. But no one could hear us. Not in the car. That was the beauty of it. When she finished talking, my mother wiped away her tears so quickly it was as though they had never existed at all. I pretended they didn't, out of politeness. The conversation shifted to a different topic, one far away from lectures and politics, by the time the car started moving again. The secret was wedged underneath the floor mat and the upholstery. That is where I've let it stay. The night looms heavy like a fire curtain strung from the heavens. Street lamps and car lights pass us in flickers of reds and yellows, and the cold air of almost winter prods at my spine in spite of the seat warmers in my thick coat. My bouncing leg elicits squeaks from the leather seat, tapping in time at the radio. My mom is in the middle of telling me about the formal my sister had attended the night before. Apparently, one of the boys from the fraternity that hosted the event had asked her to go with him, and she had been nervous to attend, resistant to even talk about it. We're still not sure if that means she likes him or not. It's impossible to tell with her, and we laugh about it as the traffic light turns green. Nonchalant, I make a joke about her somehow managing to get a boyfriend before me. Good for her for finding someone her first year of college. And my mom shoots me a look of confusion out of the corner of her eye. What about Johnny? What about Johnny? I repeat, feigning ignorance. It's amazing the spots that remain sore even when half a decade separates you and the moment in question. Didn't you two date? I scoff, humorless. No, he had just invited me to that one concert. He never actually asked me out. It's clear her curiosity lingers, but my mother is polite enough not to push any further. She turns back to the road. I let the conversation die. Or try to. But old bitterness has a habit of making a home in my sternum once it's been wrested from slumber, so I blow a gust of air out the side of my mouth and sigh. He didn't date me because I wouldn't have sex with him. The confession leaves me in a whoosh. I've told my friends this story before, but never in these words, with the raw truth of it all, and never to my mother. As far as she knew, we were a will-they-won't-they that died in the water around the time college applications were due. Did he force you to do anything? Is the first thing she asks, because she always worries first, is always my mother first. I talk to my friends the same way. I inherited that habit from her. No, I answer, and that's also the truth. We never even held hands. She nods, contemplative, but doesn't let the revelation sit before she launches into a spiel about not letting people force you into anything you don't want to do and knowing when somebody is the right person. I rest my elbow on the windowsill, still listening, still nodding along and humming in agreement, watching the moon where it hangs in the sky. I notice she doesn't say anything about how I might change my mind one day. That would have been the conversation 5 years ago, but I've changed, and so has she. I've never been candid about my relationships, or the lack thereof, nor have I ever mentioned the unfortunate consequences of having a sexuality like mine. And now she believes me. The conversation has long moved on by the time the car pulls into the parking lot right outside my dorm building. We say our farewells quietly, tight hugs protecting ourselves from the night's chills. There are no last words or final thoughts, just the ever-present, unspoken agreement that truth blossoms in the interior of our SUV and dies on the breath of unrecycled air. That clicking the buckle is as good as an NDA, and vulnerability, in all its forms, will always have its own seat in our car. Death, I've learned, wanes over like afternoon in July. Clings sticky on your neck like days where the air is so thick you can't cry. You just suck in humid breaths and await the impending thunder. In the summer, we buried our black cat 6 feet below the rhododendrons. 6 feet between four people and a red toolbox, and not a single inch between us knew what to say. I was small. We still cut my short, choppy bangs over the bathroom sink, so I had never smelt death before. I had never seen adult tears before. With sweaty hands and sweaty laugh, I warbled one-liners until my sister joined my teary mirth, and my voice clawed a hole in the dirt where I could bury the feeling of mourning. Death does not concern itself with me, not the same way I've contorted my life around it. It's a bit like a god in that way, though I have rotten luck believing in those. Mama believes in reincarnation and reunions beyond the pale. Daddy believes in the cold handshake of death. I've always had a talent for making death all about myself. Mama likes to remind me that I worry too much about what I can't control. Daddy likes to remind me that with each breath, we smolder closer to gone. Oxygen kills you, didn't you know? Eternity has always seemed like too long a time to waste sleeping. The seance. Did you remember to lock the door? Tourmaline, onyx, fluorite, tiger's eye, warmed in pockets, scratching the callous tips of your fingerprints, warding off, holding back, grounding. Grounding. You find breath does come easier, smoothing the stones with your sweat. Outside, the wind whines like a wounded wolf. Latch the windows. Check the door. The bundle of mugwort clenched in your palm smolders with cooling ashes. You're growing numb to the smell. Juniper, time, click the lighter. On, off, on, off. Pace the house, pulling curtains closed, locking doors, locking windows. Finish the lap. Take it again. On, off, on, off. Smoke trails you like a train of thought, wreathing and rippling against the ceiling in hazy clouds. Sinking feelings, rising hackles. Something's outside. Lock the door. Shut the blinds. There is no moonlight to guide your path. The blizzard rages on. You shattered the bottle of holy water when the lamps first flickered out, and you've been blessing the house ever since. Find the jar of olive oil. Recite psalms from memory. Psalm 23. Psalm 23. Your cup runneth over. Restoreth your soul. I will feel no evil. Your tongue goes gummy with repetition. The stones clatter in your pocket. Relight the ashes. On. Off. Something's behind you. Check the door. You avoid mirrors. Cross yourself. Cross the door. Crush shards of salt crystals underfoot with each hesitated step. You scatter handfuls more somewhere behind your left shoulder. Snow batters the roof in flakes of shrapnel. The house groans and shrieks in the current of wind. The lights dim, crackle, surge forth, flare. Preparest the table in the presence of mine enemies. You steeple your fingers, gasp through your mouth, bite on the fluorite until it splinters. Pace. Trembling fingers run through oily hair and pull on the strands until the smoke fades. Footsteps. The lights blink out. Under the weight of heaving lungs, your ribs buckle, pinching flesh. In a pool of darkness, the house chokes. Outside, winter yowls like the wild hunt. Where there is a hunter, there must be prey. Cut the connection, flicker the switch, fumble the lighter, bite through your tongue in the inky blackness. On, off, I will feel no evil. An exhale, the rancid iron reek of blood. Did you remember to lock the door? House rules. The wipes and the gloves, first thing, guns drawn, the erasing of all that you put your hands on, the erasing of proof that you walked on this floor, that you held my heart beating, you opened the door, the oxides and chlorides, the cleansing to clean, the lemon and linen to mask where you've been, the promises held to, the pleaded requests, the enter my home as no more than a guest, the loud nights, the sleepless, the tapping, the knocking, the litanies and nightlight, the rocking and rocking, the canines and steak knives, the splattered cream sauce, the love overridden by the sound of a cough, the quick pinching breaths, the crackling pulse, the flinch away, finger blade skittish repulse, the half-bitten words, you stutter, start over, the eggshells laid down just for you to trip over, the martyr and rose, although smarter have known, it's easier to say goodbye. Touch me with rubber gloves. Touch me through a rubber-slick partition with hands that smell of the operating room floor. Could we perform surgery on your duvet? Have the hospital sheets been washed this week? Take your fingers, alcohol dampened in sanguine red, and hover, cradle, the ghost of my cheeks. There's a fault line of earth beneath your fingernails. Your palms reek of metal rust. I know they've held more than just me today. Kiss me, mouth puffed with spearmint fumes, lungs clenched on shallow exhales. I've made a list of reasons not to love you, and they all start with their scientific name. There's a colony of life that lives on your tongue that doesn't care for me the way you do. You promise you'll never hurt me, but what should I believe when you touch your smile with the same fingers that opened the door? Lead me to bed, bearing nothing but teeth, and leave me to rot at the foot. I stand before you, the trembling effigy of the lover, brushed only by the window's breath, caressed only by the evening sun as the outline of my shadow drapes itself across your lap. All I can offer is an exhibit at arm's length, free of charge, to look but not to touch. Please don't leave. Please don't touch. You say my name like patience worn sheer, like hands rubbed raw from ritual, and the rift between us yawns. The precipice crumbles. You extend forward, trembling with exertion, light haloing the crest of your head. Trust me, you beg. And in another life, another mind, I could fall. But here, to close the gap, I'd have to take your hand.
All right, so today we're back in the Words Aloud studio, and it is Kate, hello, again, and I'm here with my buddy Jason, and we are talking to author Nicole Catarino. Did I say that right? Perfect. Okay, so Nicole graduated from UConn just this past spring with a BA in English, and now is continuing studies at Louisiana State University, studying library and information science. Nicole, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been wonderful.
I know. You've read some awesome pieces for us. I'm so excited to dive into your writing, your craft, and talk a little bit about you. So why don't we start off with, where did it all begin? When did you know you wanted to write?
Oh my gosh. I've been writing for as long as I can remember, pretty much the age that I could hold a pencil. And as soon as I learned how to spell, or maybe not spell quite so perfectly, but I mean, I've been writing forever. My first real memory of writing, especially poetry, was third grade. I wrote this just incredible poem about a jungle. I had some killer Dr. Seuss rhymes in there, and it ended up winning me the poetry competition that we had at my elementary school. And that was really the moment for me where I was like, oh, wow, I can do this. Like, I want to keep doing this for as long as I can. I got to read my poem in front of the whole school in this big auditorium. And I was like, this is it for me. I want to keep doing this for as long as I can. And so poetry was really my first love. But as I got older, I started experimenting with fiction. And then once I got to college, I fell in love with creative nonfiction. And so it's really just been something that's just been constantly evolving for me as long as I can remember.
That is fantastic. Sounds like the absolute main character moment of your life. And everything has just been like uphill since then.
I really peaked in third grade, and I've just been on this downhill spiral trying to reclaim that one beautiful moment.
How do your places and people of origin inform your creative work?
I definitely think my place of origin influences my work a lot, because I was born and raised in Connecticut. And in most of my poetry, you will almost always find a reference to how miserable winter is. That is just a pretty consistent pattern for me. I will always throw in a mention of winter somewhere. Oftentimes when I'm describing environments, it's always goes back to that like small town New England vibe. I'm almost always talking about the seasons and just changes within the seasons. I think I mentioned that a little bit in Glove Compartment Secrets. You could kind of tell it was like, I didn't do this on purpose, but it was like a fall into spring, into summer, into winter. And you know, the very obvious season changes that kind of act almost as divisions between the parts in the writing. So I think that has always just been a subtle influence of Connecticut in my writing. As for people, I mean, I love to talk about my family in my writing as much as I clearly love to talk about myself. But yeah, I mean, the people I've been around have inspired me in more ways than I can possibly imagine, whether it's just taking influence from my family or taking inspiration from other writers around me, my friends, their stories, what they tell me, certain lines that they say. Often if I comb through my writing, I'll find little turns of phrases I use that might not be technically grammatically correct or may never have been said in the English language ever, but I can tell you exactly why I say that and who I can trace that back to. So it's little subtle things that I think I wouldn't notice upon my first writing, but once I actually comb back through it, I'm like, yeah, you can tell I'm from Connecticut, and you can tell I hang out with so-and-so. And so, yeah, it's been something I don't really think about, but it's definitely there.
I think one of those great things about creative writing is that you can put so much of yourself into what you're writing. And I think you do that really, really well with these pieces, from Glove Compartment Secrets to Death I've Learned, Wanes Over Afternoon in July. Then we heard Seance, House Rules, Touch Me with Rubber Gloves. And I want to talk a little bit about what your writing influences are. So I know that you just mentioned you take a lot from your own life, but is there anyone that you read that you're like, I want to incorporate some of what they've got going on into my stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Ada Limón is one of my favorite poets ever. I actually recently just bought her newest poetry book. I am such an Ada Limón fan because she is phenomenal at writing about the menial in a way that gives it real meaning to the point where you start looking at things differently that you never knew you could find poetry in. And she's even more spectacular at reeling you in with something that seems very harmless. Like one of the poems she had in her most recent collection is all about like bird watching. And she's just talking about looking at birds in a bird feeder. But by the time you get to the end of the poem, she's concocted a really powerful theme about loneliness, and she'll always end with one or two really short lines that kind of punch you in the gut, and you're like, oh man, I didn't know the poem about birds was gonna like make me rethink my entire existence. And so I've really tried to channel that in my writing, just the power of words and being able to find real universal meaning in something that may not seem very spectacular at first. And then being able to reel in your readers with something they can relate to, and then punching them with something that they've never thought about before, or, you know, a little short little line where they go, oh, wow, okay, yeah, man, just leaving them with that emotional reckoning, I suppose. And then Ilya Kaminsky would probably be my other big influence, because he's just, oh my gosh, his word choice is spectacular. The way he creates imagery and other images within his writing, what he talks about, just the power within his writing. Like, I couldn't possibly do his work justice with just the words I have, but I've always really tried to do what he does, which is finding unusual word couples, I suppose, like putting words together that you wouldn't normally think would go together, or finding really strange vocabulary to describe things that, again, may never have been said before, you wouldn't normally think would be used to describe something like rain or the sun or an emotion. Just finding really unique ways to describe human experiences that may be really difficult to describe to begin with. I'm definitely not perfect at it. I'm not as good as Ilya Kaminsky, but that is something I definitely work on a lot.
And I think we heard that in your performance today, which I really enjoyed. And I just wanted to pick apart a little bit more on Glove Compartment Secrets. Is that like entirely autobiographical or memoir? Is it entirely imagination, or is it somewhere in between?
Oh, that's a great question. It is creative nonfiction. So for the most part, it is memoir. I do not have a perfect memory, so there may be some smaller details I've made up, but no, the crux of the piece is entirely nonfiction. All those events really happened. The only thing I made up were the names to protect my friend's privacy. But yeah, that is entirely factual. That all very much did happen. My sister did end up going to the formal with the boy. It was fine. But yeah, that is really how I came out to my mom several times over and over again.
I was having this intimate conversation in a car that was really protecting us from any other circumstance, any other situation where I probably wouldn't have shared what I did in the car. And thinking about high school, going on drives with friends, and that was when we talked, and that was when we got real. And I love that you were able to capture that moment and then do the thing that poetry does, which is give that moment to somebody else and say, hey, how can you feel yourself in this moment too? So yeah. I think that was amazing.
Thank you.
Do you have a preference as far as whether you prefer creative nonfiction or writing something completely pulled from your imagination? Is there something you lean toward most of the time?
Ooh, that is a really good question. I think, funny enough, and I've been told this by many professors, I do my best work when I pull from personal experience. However, pulling from personal experience is really scary, and sharing these parts about yourself is terrifying. I mean, when I found out that Glove Compartment Secrets is going to be published by Long River, I did have a moment where I just had a very minor anxiety attack going, oh my God, okay, so now hundreds of people are going to read this and know these things about me and my family, and just, so it is really scary to kind of dig into yourself and pull out these real experiences. But Unfortunately, that is how you get the best writing, because obviously only you know how to describe those experiences, and because you've gone through it, you can put things into words that other people may not be able to communicate, but still feel in exactly the same way. So it is really powerful when I'm able to read a piece that I've pulled directly from something really sensitive and vulnerable that happened to me, and somebody comes up to me afterwards and is like, thank you for sharing that, because I feel the exact same way. Like, that is such a gratifying experience for me. But yeah, I'm still trying to learn that it's okay to share things that are really personal and vulnerable about yourself, and you don't have to make things up whole cloth to have a really powerful poetry piece.
No, I completely agree with you there, and I think that there is something to be said about writing from personal experience and it being so raw. And a lot of the times that is what pulls people, and that is that draw for people. And I think, like Jason said, Glove Compartment Secrets did that wholly and completely. So we really appreciate you sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate you letting me read it.
Of course. So is there anywhere that our listeners, your readers, could follow you on socials or find your stuff?
Ooh, I really should make social media accounts for my writing. This is my one flaw. I have not considered this before. I do have pieces published in a couple places. You can find Touch Me With Rubber Gloves in the New Square Journal. I was published, I believe, in the spring of 2022 edition. So you can find me there. You can find Glove Compartment Secrets in the 2022 edition of Long River Review. And as for my other poetry, hopefully I will get it published someday, and you can also find it there. Hopefully I will get this chapbook published someday. But yeah, unfortunately I do not have any social media accounts, so I am elusive.
That's all right. It just adds to your mystique. So what are you writing these days? What are you working on? Aside from all the things you have to work on for school, which probably takes up a lot of time.
Yeah, I am mostly writing essays for my grad program. But yeah, in the meantime, I'd like to bolster my chapbook a little bit more and just find some fit. I'd like to bolster my chapbook more and find some more pieces and write some more so I can make it a little bit bigger, make it something that's, you know, worth publishing instead of just the like 10 or 15 poems I have right now. So I'm definitely working on that. I am writing more creative nonfiction, just about myself, things I've been through. I don't know if they'll ever be published, but writing has always been very therapeutic for me. So as I'm going through grad school and tearing my hair out with all my assignments, it is really nice to sometimes just open up a Word doc and put everything onto the page, even if it isn't good or polished.
Sometimes that's what you need to do, is just put words on page. That's
exactly
been a goal for me. I think that's been a goal for a lot of writers, is just get words on the page, and then you can go from there.
Exactly.
Well, I think we're about at time. So just want to say thank you again so much, Nicole, for joining us, for joining me and Jason in the studio. We really enjoyed hearing all of your pieces, and we can't wait to see all the things that come out of the next few years to come.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me on Words Aloud. This has been wonderful.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
I want to say a big thank you to Nicole for coming on the show today and sharing her piece, her life, and some great conversation. Until next time, this is Words Aloud.
If you'd like to submit your work for an appearance on Words Aloud, you can send it to wordsaloudshow@gmail.com. That's wordsaloudshow@gmail.com. This show is produced with the support of WHUS Radio at the University of Connecticut.